Yesterday we have discussed my dog cognitive process. The different jhana produce different effects, either in this present life or life after, or from the second life onward. The first jhana, because it's the weakest one. Why is the weakest one? Lack of repetition from the preceding one. So it's the weakest one. Since it's the weakest one, it only produce immediately its effective karma, which can only produce its effect in this very life. If it cannot produce its effect, it becomes defunct karma. In the second number seven jhana is the second weakest, because lack of succeeding, lack of support from the succeeding jhana. Then it only produces subsequent effective, it generates subsequent effective karma, which can produce its result in the immediate future life. If it cannot produce its result in the immediate future life, it becomes defunct karma. But in the middle, from the second up to the sixth jhana, never become defunct karma. If it cannot produce its result, its karmic potency underlying the mind and matter continuity. We think for a condition to ripen and emerge, it's always underlying the mind and matter continuity, never become defunct karma. So long a person still remain in the realm of samsara, unless one enter into parinibbana. After parinibbana, there's no mind and matter, so the effect cannot take place. Not even arahant or Buddha can escape from the ripening of this result within second to sixth jhana.
That's the anusaya, underlying anusaya.
Anusaya is called defilement. Yes, the lips. If it does not ripen now, it underlies the mind and matter continuity, waiting for a favorable condition to ripen. Here, suppose now, yesterday we take color as object. Color as object. Now suppose we take being, satta, as object. So if we can cultivate more generosity or loving kindness or compassion or honesty towards the object, for example the object is satta, being, then the jhana here, it leaves behind a lot of many beautiful karmic force latent in our mind and matter. When this karmic force produces its result, then the person will become a being full of loving kindness, compassion, patience, beautiful, and loved by many. So we have to cultivate more wholesome quality towards the object, so that it can leave behind beautiful karmic force. And if we can contemplate the object as impermanent, suffering, and non-self, for example, take the maturity or mentality as impermanent, non-self, suffering, and non-self, and this jhana will run for uncountable times, and it leaves behind very strong, powerful karmic force in our mind and matter continuity. And when this karma ripens and bear its result, the person will become that karma ripens, then it will produce a person endowed with very sharp wisdom. And when this person practice vipassana very swiftly, he will cease nibbana. Okay. Now we go back to five-door committed process. The arising of I consciousness, for example, the arising of I consciousness depends on various cause and conditions. The occurrence of consciousness depends on various cause and conditions. For example, for I consciousness to arise, it depends on, number one, visible object. Without a visible object, eye consciousness cannot arise. Number two, depends on eye contact. Without the impingement from the external object to the eye sensitivity, eye consciousness cannot arise. Number three, depends on light. Light. Without light, you cannot see anything. And also depends on the eye sensitivity. For a blind person who has no eye sensitivity, they cannot see anything. It also depends on attention. Even the elephant appears in front of you, if you close your eyes, do not pay attention to it, you also cannot see that elephant. So the arising of eye consciousness depends on various cause and condition. Since, and this cause and condition are also impermanent. They are not permanent all the time. So things depend on conditions which are not permanent. Can I say it's a self? Can you say it's a self or not? No. So consciousness is not a self. It's non-self. And because of tremendous speeds of arising and passing away, one after another, depend on cause and condition. It cannot find that, it cannot find any substance in that self. There's no substance at all. So consciousness is definitely not self. Okay? And also, and why people think consciousness is a self, is as a self. When they see something, or they say, I see something, I hear something, that identify consciousness as self. Why? Because they cannot break down the compactness of continuity. Santati Ganna. They cannot break down the the compactness of continuity that they identify seeing as I, hearing as I, tasting as I. Because they cannot break down the whole process as one consciousness arises and passing away, and that become a condition for another, arise and pass away, become a condition for another, arise and pass away. It cannot break down the compactness of continuity. That's why they identify consciousness as I, as self, as permanent, as soul. Okay? And also, because they cannot break down the compactness of function. Each consciousness must associate with at least eight mental factors. I have not yet reached mental factors. For example, eye consciousness must accompany with feeling. The mental factor of feeling experience the desirable aspect of the occur. The mental factor of perception perceives the quality of the object and makes a mark to recognize it again in the future. And the mental factor of contact, impinge the consciousness and the eye sensitivity and the color object. And mental factor of unpleasantness fixing the mind on the object so that you can see. So all the mental factors perform their specific function in order to help consciousness in the act of apprehending the object. So So can we say this perception is I, feeling is I, one-pointedness is I? We can't say that. We say consciousness is I because we not yet break down the completeness of function of each mental state that we identify it as I. So for meditators, when they reach listening the mentality, they have to break down the completeness of continuity and the completeness of function. Only at that time, the non-self characteristic become very clear to him. Now we understand theoretically enough for the present moment. So you are convinced the consciousness is not self. And if consciousness is self, it can yield to your wish. Something self can yield to your wish. Okay, let's say, I want the consciousness stop at I consciousness only. No more arising. No more for receiving consciousness to arise. Is it possible? Not possible. This is the law of consciousness, that it must arise. If the object is very great object, 17 moments, consciousness must arise and pass away. It's a fixed law of consciousness, if the object is great object. So we cannot say, oh, let my consciousness stop at I consciousness. Or let my consciousness stop at first jhavana only, no second jhavana. The consciousness are not yield to our wish. That's why it's not self. If it's self, the consciousness can listen to us. We can control it. We can exercise control over that consciousness. But because it's not self, that we can't control it. Okay? And for I consciousness, except I consciousness arises depend on I sensitivity. The rest of consciousness, jhavana or registering consciousness or receiving consciousness, except I consciousness, all consciousness arise depend on the heart space. We already understood that the unwholesome jhana, if we react with bad attitude, we accumulate a lot of unwholesomeness. And when this unwholesome karma ripens, we have to pay for it. We have to bear that result. So in order to avoid all this unwholesome karma, then we need to have four supreme efforts. The right efforts in cultivating a good mental state. What are the number one? What is the number one? To prevent the arising of evil. How can you prevent the arising of evil? Practicing?
Metta.
Okay, there's one way.
Avoiding difficult circumstances, avoiding dangerous circumstances, associating with the wrong people.
Okay. And Buddha also gives the way to prevent the arising of evil in Samyutta Nikaya, if I'm not mistaken. The simile of tortoise. He said a tortoise at one evening come out searching for food. So at the same time, a fox, it's called jackal, also come out to search for food. So when the tortoise see the jackal, he quickly draw in his limbs and neck into himself, share. Then keep silent. So just when the jackal saw the tortoise, okay, I will eat his limb and neck when he extend his limb and neck. But the tortoise keep silent without extending his limbs. So after some time, the jackal lost interest. Then he left. So Buddha gives this simile. So the way to prevent the arising of evil is to guard your sixth sense door. How to guard your sixth sense door? Because usually the deformation arises through the unguarded sixth sense door. You see the beautiful object, immediately, spontaneously, attachment arises. Because mind is very quick. When you see the unpleasant object, anger arises. So mind is very quick. If you without guarding your sixth sense door. So how to guard your sixth sense door? By concentrate on one meditation subject, either samatha or vipassana. For example, whenever you go or wherever you go, you concentrate on your breath or four elements or different alternate material mentality or materiality. Even you see something, the attachment cannot arise because your mind is busy engaging in discerning the four elements for anatana, the breath. So the five senses are closed at that moment. So the deformment cannot arise to the five senses. So this is one way to prevent the arising of evil by concentrating on one type of meditation subject. Just like happened in one Mahathera in Sri Lanka, Tissa Mahathera. He used to practice skeleton meditation, and from that, from first jhana, then he practiced vipassana up to equanimity towards all formation. One day he went for alms round. I think he went out. Then at that time, there's a lady just quarreling with her husband, and came out and meet this Mahathera bhikkhu on the way. Then this lady laughed. So Mahathera, hearing the sound, he looked up and saw a set of her teeth. Then he quickly contemplated skeleton, externally. Then come back internally, skeleton, and reach first jhana. After first jhana, he contemplate again mind and matter and reach Sangha Obeka up to the Ahanda ship in standing position. So after that, his husband chased after his wife and asked the Mahathera, did you see a beautiful girl come pass by? Then Mahathera said, I didn't see any girl, I only see a skeleton. So this is how to prevent the arise. If he did not have that mindfulness and concentration and contemplation, the lust may arise when seeing the beautiful girl. Because at that time he's guarding his sense door by concentrating on the skeleton, that the unwholesome mental state does not arise in his mind. So this one way to guard, to prevent the arising of evil. Once the evil has already arisen, then you have to discard it. How? How to discard the evil which has already arisen? How to put in the wholesome? Can anyone give me a suggestion?
What do you mean by to discard it?
The unwholesome mental state already arisen in your mind.
Uh-huh.
So if you allow it to continue, you accumulate a lot of unwholesomeness. So you have to quickly discard it in order to make a stop.
Return to the opposite.
Okay, good. It's one of the ways. I think the first day I came, I have already given you 5 ways to remove the distracting thoughts. All of you have forgotten already.
It's almost like when anger arises,
right. So the first, I remember the first talk I have given to you, the first method is pay attention to the opposite state of that unwholesomeness. For example, when anger arises, you pay to the opposite mental state of anger, which is loving kindness. So when the greed arises towards an opposite sex, how to do? Yes, again? Yes, you pay attention to the 32 part, all the skeleton, like the Mahatisa Tara. 32 part, one by one, then you become, you feel repulsive towards that person. Then you become detached. Then if, for example, the attachment to an inanimate things arise, and how you discard the evil? Right. If you have attachment towards inanimate things, for example, your car, your beautiful house, the attachment is not good, as you know already. So you should contemplate the impermanence of all formations. Even the water in the great ocean gradually dry up. Great as it is subject to change, subject to destruction. What about this object, which lasts but only for a while? You can contemplate in this way, then you overcome your evil mental state. Then you cultivate a mental state full of wisdom. It's the way how to discard evil.
And Sister White, in the case of contemplating the 32 parts, that is meant to conjure up an aversion, right?
Not aversion.
It's not aversion. What is it?
It's aversion.
It was referred to by the side as being something distressing.
Repulsive. Repulsive doesn't mean aversion. It's a different thing.
Like discussion.
After you have the repulsive feeling, then you develop detachment. Because you see the body as beauty, then you develop attachment. Mm-hmm. But once you see the repulsiveness of the body, you develop detachment. It's not the anger, it's not the aversion. Why people get attached? Because they think it's beauty, it's permanent. But once you see it's not as beauty as what you think, then you don't want, you detach to it. You detach from it. So the one way is to change the unwholesome mental state to the wholesome mental state by paying its opposite. Then the second one, the talk I have given to you, how? To reflect the danger of the unwholesome thoughts. These unwholesome thoughts will bring me to the four apaya. So I should quickly give up it by reflecting. Or another way, by avert your attention to other things. For example, you now get very angry with that person. Go away. Why you continue quarreling with him? Just go away. Then you change your mind. By avert your attention to other things. And number four, inquiring into the cause of your refinement. Inquiring the cause of your unwholesome mental state. As you keep on inquiring the cause, then the unwholesome mental state will stop flowing. Number five, you clench your teeth, okay? With the roof pressed against your roof of your mouth, then you bit down, constrain the unwholesome mental state with wholesomeness. This is the 5 ways the Lord Buddha advised you.
You were supposed to scold yourself, wasn't that one? Or was that That's a fifth. To scold yourself. To say, hey, cut it out.
That's another way given by Visuddhimagga.
Ah.
There are many alternatives given by Visuddhimagga. And number three, to arouse an arisen wholesome state. For example, a person who has never performed any charity, he should try arouse the effort to perform the charity. If the person has never kept 5 precepts, then he should arouse his effort to keep 5 precepts. If a person has never tried samatha meditation, he should arouse his effort to try samatha. And also, if he has never tried vipassana, he should arouse his effort to try vipassana. This is called the effort to arouse an arisen wholesome state. Number four, to develop and bring to the perfection the wholesome state. Keep on striving with strong determination until you reach the perfection of the wholesome state. Of course, the perfection is arahant. So you keep on trying until you achieve the goal. So these are the four supreme efforts in cultivating good mental state. And that good mental state is very important for your future. It bring you to the good plane, endowed with wisdom, endowed with compassion, and endowed with loving kindness.
Just for clarification, I just want to make sure this is meant to create good karma,
mm-hmm.
but it can do nothing about past karma, right?
Mm-hmm. Any other question? Today is a bit quiet, very unusual.
No questions.
Okay, how to generate habitual wholesomeness by wise attention? Wise attention means yoniso manasikara. Yoniso manasikara. For example, a person. You meet, for example, your beloved person. Passed away. Then how you generate habitual wholesome karma by wise attention? Instead of beating one's heart, weeping, crying out, that weeping, crying out is rooted in anger. Any crying is rooted in anger. Because of unsatisfactory in the heart, you cry out. So how to overcome that anger? By wise attention? When your beloved one passed away.
Contemplating from...
Yes, contemplating. Buddha says, even the Lord Buddha, possessed of highest wisdom and all the psychic powers, still have to pass away. It's death, birth, death, death. No one can escape from it. So if you contemplate the impermanence of all formations, then you can overcome your sadness. One of my friends, when her father was sick very seriously in the hospital, she was so sad, and in the hospital keep on beating her heart. I was so shocked. I said, "You are Buddhist. Can you contemplate impermanence of all formations?" Then she feel very uncomfortable. Then after that she think that, am I abnormal or sister abnormal? Then she went and see psychiatrist. Psychiatrist said, "I am abnormal." It's natural for a person to cry when a father is sick, But I said that it's natural for a person to cry when a father is sick seriously in the hospital. But this is only for ordinary person, not for a person who has endowed with Dhamma. If you have the strength of the mind, you know how to contemplate. You can overcome your sadness very quickly. So if you don't have the strength of the mind, you just follow the current. Carried away by the current. So that because the psychiatry is not an ordinary person, so she said, "I'm abnormal." Okay, that is it.
There's a sutta that says, I'm sorry, Buddha died, the somebody that said it was like the light of the sun and the moon going out.
A bit of Pali?
I'm sorry, Kusadai.
That, okay.
There's a sutta that says the Buddha said it was like the light of the sun and the moon going out.
Going out, okay.
So you're experiencing something, it wasn't grief, but was it like a sense of loss?
Yes, it's a loss for a sankha. It's a loss for other people, because Venerable Sariputta endowed with sharp wisdom. After Buddha, he's the number one, foremost in wisdom. So it's a loss for all beings. It's not a grief. Mm-hmm. Any other question?
If there's no self, then how can it be a loss?
Loss.
Is it that it's relative, in relative reality is a loss and not in absolute terms?
Because in the very beginning, I have discussed. There are two types of ultimate truth. One is conventional truth. The other one is conventional truth. One is ultimate truth. So in talking, you and I all are conventional truth. But if you penetrate into the human being, mind and matter, you only find kalapa arising and passing away. Mind and matter also, mental consciousness and mental factor also arising and passing away. How can you say it's self? It's a self. So, in this world, there are two types of truth, ultimate truth and conventional truth. Buddha sometimes also used conventional truth in order to communicate. He cannot say, oh, Nama Rupa, come here, Nama Rupa, come here. He can't, because he has to communicate. So if we live in the world, sometimes we use conventional truth to communicate here. Okay. So, how to generate habitual wholesomeness by wise attention? If you, for example, the attachment to the object, we know already, by the way of contemplating the impermanence, sabbe sankhara anicca, all conditioned things are impermanent. This very good way of contemplating, I found it very effective. Sometimes I feel very happy. But I also know, this happiness won't last. Sometimes I feel very sad. I also know this happiness won't last. So I do not cling to it. If I do not contemplate this happiness won't, this sadness won't last, I keep on crying. Then I identify this happiness as I. Then the worse, become worse. So I know, this happiness won't last. This sadness won't last. So very quick, I let go of it. So I found it personally a very effective way of contemplation.
I found it great with my lunch today. I just wanted to report.
Yes.
That's contemplation with this plan.
Thank you. Okay. Then we have talked about how to when person and the object. Now, how to generate habitual wholesomeness by wise attention towards a certain situation. For example, you are abused, you are defamed, or you are ill-treated, or you lost your health, lost your property. So how to generate habitual wholesomeness? By wise attention, rather than allowing the anger to arise. It is very important question for you. Yes.
Well, I would rejoice that I just paid a debt. That will not lighter.
Very good. That's why, by way of reflecting kamma sakata. Kamma sakata means I am the owner of my karma. The Buddha says, I born of my karma. I'm related to my karma. I abide supported by my karma. Whatever karma I have performed, I am the heir. So if you reflect like that, you develop equanimity towards the situation. For example, during Buddha's Parinibbana, the Chunda offered him very rich pork, very rich food. After the Lord Buddha partake that food, he has very serious diarrhea. So if ordinary being, you say that because of you, offer me such food that I got diarrhea. So it's our habitual tendency to blame other people, rather than find out the cause. But the Buddha knows, it's his own bad karma. Because one of his previous life, when he was a physician, because of certain reasons, he get angry with the patients, then he give him the medicine, which caused very serious diarrhea up to the death of that patient. So because of that bad karma he has performed in his previous life, then before he entered into Parinibbana, he suffered very seriously through the diarrhea. But he knows, this is my karma. So he has no anger, has no reaction at all. So this is also a very good way to overcome your sadness, your anger, to reflect, I am the owner of my karma. Whatever I have performed, whatever I experience now, is a result of my karma. Then you overcome your anger. Instead, the wholesome, very wholesome consciousness associated with karma sakati samadhi, the right view about the karma arise in your mind. That right view of karma is three roots. Three roots. So you become a person, have a lot of understanding of law of karma. So reflect the karma is one's own air. It's very effective process. Any questions?
It sounds like a good idea, but when but there's also, you know, the other three factors and producing materiality, chitta, you know, temperature and nutritive essence. I mean, is there a way of determining whether kama, I mean the Buddha would know of course, if something happened so they would kama, but for the average person, can we know if it was, you know, kama produced or chitta produced or
But for example, state cannot be, certain condition cannot be, all the of course materiality are produced by four causes, as the Seattle say, you know, produced by karma, consciousness, nutriment and the temperature. But most of the case, what you have experienced in your life, you know, the main factor is karma. Because we reflect in such a way to help us to alleviate our suffering. If we do not reflect in this way, we have to suffer many days, hours, stay frustrated in anger. We are trying to help ourselves to alleviate our own suffering by developing the right view.
Is it rooted in anger specifically or aversion generally?
A bit of pardon?
Is it rooted in anger specifically or the aversion category in general?
It's rooted in anger. Aversion and anger is the same. I do not find the difference between them.
I thought that aversion was a like a basket. And one form of aversion is anger.
Oh, okay. For example, the whipping and beating one's heart is rooted in anger. But this type of anger is, how to call it, decreasing. Decreasing? So decreasing? Go backward.
Decreasing
anger. Not the...
Aversion. Aversion is more pushing.
It's still under the anger, but it's decreasing anger. Aversion, as it... It's the English word. In Pali we call dosa. All ranging from violence to the subtle irritation are all under dosa. Aversion is, I think it's the translation. Am I answering your question?
I'm thinking about it.
Okay, you can ask
later.
Okay. Because if you make it more clear, maybe I can give you more precise answer. Okay.
So, about this, the three, four causes, nutritive essence and heat and temperature and all that, those are contributing factors, say, towards a certain condition.
and that is a
materiality.
So those, why they should cause a certain thing to happen in the materiality, that is due to karma. So now
it's not clear to me.
We say that there are four things that karma, citta, and like that. So supposing I get a diarrhea due to something I ate, is that my karma or this, you know, that thing I ate? I mean, that's nutritive.
To understand the direct cause and to understand the working of karma is not a domain of our wisdom.
Yeah.
It's a domain of Buddha's wisdom. But if we can reflect, I mean, this is my karma, you very quickly you alleviate your anger and your unsatisfactory. You know? Yes. You help yourself to get it, the unwholesomeness, very quickly. If not, you keep on complaining others.
Yeah, but sister, if you always say that, then you won't do anything to help yourself. You say, oh, this is my karma.
It's my karma, you quickly take medicine.
Yeah.
Of course, we are not all only karma, then do nothing. No, yeah. No, quickly take medicine to cure it.
That's right.
So maybe in the current moment, you use that karma idea to overcome the unwholesome state. But for the future, then you decide, well, I'm not going to eat that again.
Okay, right.
And that changes the conditions.
Yes, good. But sometimes you eat other things that will cause that again. But it's a good way to.
Well, if it's not karma, then you'll never know. It's also by meeting it with equanimity, that gives you, you can be joyful that it's giving you an opportunity to create a lot of wholesome karma.
Right, good. So sometimes they say that your enemy is your great teacher.
Mm-hmm.
Because it gives you opportunity to practice patience.
Right. And suffering. Suffering is your great teacher.
That's why how you contemplate is very important. You know, if you contemplate rightly, you accumulate a lot of wholesomeness. If you contemplate wrongly, then you accumulate a lot of unwholesomeness. Okay, now we have finished the jhana or cognitive process in the sense sphere. The five-door cognitive process and the mind-door cognitive process are occurring in the sense sphere. And now we go to the mind-door cognitive process happen in the absorption. It's fine material. Fine material. So when a meditator approaching the first jhana, the cognitive process, the mind-door cognitive process arrests. The cognitive process, the consciousness runs as follows. First is vibrating, because all cognitive process must emerge from the boundary. So number one is vibrating consciousness, second one is arresting consciousness, then followed by preparation. Sorry, mind-door averting consciousness. Followed by preparation, I will explain better. Followed by accept, and followed by conformity, then followed by change of lineage, then attend jhana. After that, the mind lapses into sangha. So for the first attainment of jhana, the jhana consciousness only lasts for one mind moment. The initial attainment. So the person may not know he has attained jhana because it's so quick. It's initial. But by repetition, by the skillfulness you have gained, then gradually the jhana consciousness can arise during this time. Maybe last for half an hour, 1 hour, and 2 hours or 3 hours. But this is only the first attainment, the initial attainment of jhana.
Is that in one lifetime? Mm-hmm. Well, let's say in this lifetime you haven't attained jhana, but
in the previous lifetime you had. In this lifetime, would it still just arise once?
Yes.
Yes, so each lifetime.
Yes. Not different from the past consciousness. Different from past only along the samsara, the past consciousness only arise once. But this one is different.
Okay.
So what is this preparation? Okay, the object, this mind door connected process of absorption, take patibhaga nimitta object.
It's the wrong spelling.
Patibhaga nimitta object. For example, anapana patibhaga nimitta object. All this consciousness take patibhaga nimitta object. So there's only one jhana consciousness moment for the first attainment.
Material, rupa jhanas, right?
Yes.
Material.
Fine material jhanas.
Fine material jhanas.
We have...
arupa is...
we have arupa jhanas with fine material jhanas. Now we're talking about...
the normal one.
Fine material jhanas. Anapana nimitta jhanas.
Right. Okay. That's rupa jhanas.
Yes. So first one is called preparation, paritamma. What's the meaning? This consciousness prepares the mental continuum for the attainment of jhana consciousness. The second one is called asset, upachara. Now this consciousness arises in proximity to the attainment of jhana consciousness. The next is conformity, aluloma. Now this consciousness harmonizes the preceding moment with the subsequent attainment of jhana. And a change of lineage, Gotrabhu. This consciousness overcomes the sense sphere lineage and evolves the lineage of sublime consciousness or jhana consciousness.
What do you mean
a
lineage?
Lineage. For example, all this here, from here, all are called sense sphere consciousness. Jhana consciousness is called fine material consciousness or sublime consciousness. So we have change of lineage, cut off the sense sphere consciousness and reach the sublime consciousness. It's called change of lineage. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So all these are sense sphere consciousness, but here it's fine material sphere consciousness or sublime consciousness. So it's called change of meaning. Mm-hmm. All this consciousness, sense sphere consciousness, must accompany with wisdom. Without accompanying with wisdom, one cannot attain jhana.
Before we attain jhana, we get access confrontation.
Right, right.
Does that have a special pattern in these mind moments?
Within. In the access area.
No.
Before that, preceding to this attainment is called access.
But when I'm meditating and sitting and I'm seeing the nimitta and I'm in access, is this the pattern that it is?
No.
The normal mind door connected process.
Okay. Mind door connected the seven jhana, taking that patibhaga nimitta. After mind door connected process, the moment you attain jhana and this process occur in your mental stream. Okay? Is it clear?
We talk about access.
No, excess concentration. We have excess concentration and absorption concentration.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So before you reach this attainment of jhana, here, a lot of mind door connected process, taking that patibhaga nimitta as object
with excess concentration. So when the moment you reach the first attempt of jhana, the cognitive process change to this one. Is it clear?
Mm-hmm.
Any question?
No.
So through the repetition, then this jhana can last for median moment. 1 hour, 2 hours, 3 hours. We have gone through sense sphere connected process, fine material sphere connected process. Now we go to supramundane connected process. The first attainment of Sotapatti path and fruition, when a person practices vipassana, for example, contemplate anicca, dukkha, anatta of mind and matter. So, when the five faculties are balanced, then he's going to attain, going to see Nibbana, the connected process runs this. Since every connected process must emerge from a bhavanga, number one is vibrating bhavanga, arresting bhavanga, then the mind-dog averting consciousness arises, taking either impermanent suffering or non-self nature of formation. Either at that time you contemplate anicca, or you contemplate dukkha, or you contemplate anatta, either one. Of the sankhara, of the mind matter, and the preparation also contemplate taking this object as anicca, dukkha, anatta, other one, and accept, and CN is conformity. This after that change of lineage takes Nibbana as object. It cut off the lineage of wording and enters into the lineage of noble person, noble one. It's called change of lineage. And after change of lineage, then path consciousness arises, penetrates into the four noble truths, which have never penetrated before. Immediately path consciousness, fruition consciousness. Fruition consciousness arises and pass away. After that, the mind leaps into bhavanga. So the Gautrabhu change of lineage. I explain the meaning. Number one, preparation. Here, preparation. Which prepares the mental continuum for the attainment of path consciousness. The access which arises in proximity to the attainment of path consciousness, and the conformity which harmonizes the preceding moment with the subsequent attainment of the path. After this, once consciousness no longer enter into or settle down on any field of formation, then followed by Gautrabhu, change of lineage. This consciousness arises, which takes as its object the signness, the non-occurrence, the cessation, which pass out of the lineage of wording, Puduchana, and enters into the lineage of the noble one.
Yes.
So we come back to the connective process of supramundane consciousness. So the path consciousness penetrates into the four noble truths simultaneously in a single mind moment, which has never been penetrated before along the round of rebirth. So what are the four noble truths it penetrates? Number one,
okay.
The path consciousness understands the truth of suffering. What's the truth of suffering? the fire. The five aggregate of clinging is the proof of suffering. I will explain later. Then the past consciousness also performs another function, that abandoning the origin of the truth of suffering. What's the origin of the truth of suffering?
Craving.
And the past consciousness realizing the cessation of suffering, which is Nibbana. And the path consciousness developing the noble eightfold path leading to the cessation of suffering. So one single mind moment penetrates into the four noble truths simultaneously. Not only that, the path consciousness also eradicates or permanently uproot the three factors that I've mentioned before. Number one is personality view, sakaya dicit. Number two, clinging to the right and riches in the belief that they can lead to Nibbana. Sila bada pramasa. Number three, doubt about a triple gem. So in a single mind moment, the past consciousness uproots the three factors simultaneously. So how powerful the path consciousness is. And after path consciousness, the three versions arise. Experience the liberation after eradication of dishonest. Experience the bliss of Nibbana. So the path consciousness take Nibbana as a check. Gautrabhu, he has change of lineage, also take Nibbana as a check. Fruition, also take Nibbana as a check. So what's the difference between change of lineage, which takes Nibbana as a check, and the path consciousness, which also take Nibbana as a check? Change of lineage, although it takes Nibbana as a check, but it cannot uproot any defilement. It has no power to uproot defilement. Only past consciousness uproots the defilement.
Sister, when you say take Nibbana as object, is that a conscious mind moment?
The consciousness, past consciousness, having Nibbana as object.
That's a conscious.
It's
a conscious mind moment.
Mm-hmm.
You have to.
All these are consciousness. All these are consciousness.
Yeah.
All these are consciousness moments.
Yeah. But you have to kind of reshape the. You have to reshape the sort of while you're in that state. You have to deliberately desire for that. The consciousness.
When the when you practice vipassana, now up to sankhara upekhanyana, equanimity towards formation, and if all the five contrary faculties are balanced, are matured, then you see the Nibbana.
It's not a conscious. It just happens.
Yes. When all conditions are fulfilled. So any questions?
Well, I keep thinking that there are people who spontaneously might enter into that consciousness without any lifetime training, or without training as much as one would think they would need to train in order to get there. And one question is that true?
Mm-hmm.
And if it's true, can you then understand that by saying it's their parami? That's why...
You mean it can enter into this attainment?
Uh-huh.
Unless he's sotapan in this very life. He already sotapan.
Yeah.
For example, past life, he already sotapan.
Yeah.
When he reborn this lifetime, he was already sotapan. Then he can enter into the confusion attainment, not this attainment.
Uh-huh. So it may appear to others that this is just a spontaneous occurrence because there wasn't any training to become become a Sophie Sadhana in his lifetime, but this normal person ended up there, so it's based on a past life that maybe even that person isn't aware of.
Right. Because of past attainment already. But so that's why Buddha speaking of cause and effect. We say, wow, so quick this person, but people have tried very hard in the past. If we are slow in the present life, we blame ourselves because we are lazy in the past life. People are meditating, we are staying around. So no, we are slower than others.
Yeah, but that person would have very good, wholesome, meritorious kind of...
Which person?
This person that who suddenly becomes a sotapanna.
Mm.
It can be just a person who doesn't keep the precepts or anything. I mean, he may not consciously say, okay, I'm keeping the precepts, but he'll be a truthful, honest kind of person, right? He'll be a good person.
After become sotapanna.
No, before.
No, in this normal life. Now, somebody here might be a very good person and may have been a sotapanna before, mm-hmm. and then suddenly.
Have been a sotapanna before.
Mm-hmm. And then reach this path and fruition in this life very quickly. But we will see that in that person.
No, question. If already sotapanna before, this fruition consciousness cannot arise. Again.
Yeah, it won't.
Because one moment already gone, never arrives for a second time. But he can enter into fruition consciousness.
Fruition consciousness.
Experience the bliss of Nirvana. That's another connected process I'm going to tell you. Yeah.
What I'm saying is that person would be in some ways an outstanding person. I mean, a very good person.
Yes, he will never break his five precepts, even in a dream.
Right.
There are many ways to justify, you know. We, if not yet reached sotapanna, we only understand theoretically because only the past consciousness penetrates into four number two simultaneously. So the Lord Buddha says, it's because in the Samyutta Nikaya, it's because not understanding, not penetrating into the four noble truths that you and I has run along the round of rebirth. Once the four noble truths have been penetrated and understood, then broke out is the craving and is the end of all becoming. So that's why the four noble truths is the essence of the Buddha's teaching.
To go further with Beatrice's question, I think that one of the aspects she was speaking of, she's saying, what if someone's very quick to attain?
Mm-hmm.
And is it because of parami?
Yes.
And I'm remembering a previous teaching you gave about the four types of individuals,
mm-hmm.
and how two spirits are no longer in
existence. Right.
Well, I thought maybe that would help her understand more of that question.
There are four types of individuals. Huh? Number one, I cannot remember the pali. Number one, when only distant sensor, one sensor of teaching of the Buddha, he can become a rahan.
Ukatiti.
This type of beings has no more exist in the world. So don't hope, by listening Dhamma I can become a Rahan, no need to practice. Now these are beings no more exist in the world. The second one, this are person have to listen to the Dhamma talk and practice for a short period of time. Only can become a Rahan. Like the five bhikkhu who attend the Buddha before he become enlightenment. Mm-hmm. After Buddha gives first sermon, then the five people become enlightenment. Now these are people have to practice, listen, then practice, listen the talk, practice again, listen the talk, practice again, and become arahant. So that's our second type of beings. The third type of beings, like us, have to listen Dhamma talk many times, practice 1 year, 3 years, 4 years, 7 years, 30 years, only can become Satsang or Arahant. And the last type of being, no matter how hard he tries, he cannot achieve any path in person. We belong to third and fourth. We don't know which category. Just now I said, what is the truth of suffering? The five aggregates of clinging is the truth of suffering. What are the five aggregates of clinging? Aggregates of materiality. These are including 28 kinds of rupa. The aggregate of feeling. Aggregate of perception. Aggregate of formation. Aggregate of consciousness. So this five aggregates of clinging, same as mind and matter. For example, the aggregate of materiality is equal to materiality. The aggregate of feeling equal to the mental factor of feeling. The aggregate of perception equal to mental factor of perception. The aggregate of formation excludes perception and feeling. The remaining 52 mental factors are under the aggregate of formation. We are going to discuss all these 52 mental factors. And the 81, because the 8 supramundane consciousness is not the aggregate of claiming. So the 81 consciousness are equal to aggregate of consciousness. So this is the truth of suffering. Clinging, you're clinging them as I, myself, mine, is the truth of suffering. Now we come to stream entry, path consciousness, dominantly about the three factors. I think we have gone through this already. You want to know? Okay, go back. Number one, personality, view, sakkaya, dhiti. He no longer considers the five aggregates as I, mine, or myself. Although sometimes he can say, oh, my things, my property is on conventional truth. Then, he has no attachment to rest and riches, such as the practice of imitating the behavior of cows and dogs during ancient Buddha's time. Many practice, some they imitate like dogs for years, some imitate like cows. They think that this way of practice can lead to the liberation from the samsara. So there's two person practice like dogs and cows. So one day they meet Buddha. Then they ask Buddha, I have been practicing this cow practice for so long time. After that, where should I reborn? He thinks that I will be reborn in a very good place. Buddha says, you should not ask me. No, I ask again. Buddha says, second time, you should not ask me. Third time, they insisted, please tell me where will I reborn. Buddha says, you should not ask me. After fourth time, okay, if you want to know, I will tell you. If you still cling to this wrong view, after that you will go to hell. You will go to hell. Wow, they start crying. I have been practicing this so hard and so many years, thinking that this practice will lead me to a liberation of round of rebirth. How can you say I go to hell? then Buddha explained that this is the wrong way of practice. So it's called attachment to rest and riches. But if a person already becomes sotapan, he has accepted the noble eightfold path. It's the only way, because he walked the noble eightfold path and he attained nibbana. So he truly believes the only way is the noble eightfold path. So he has no attachment to others, rights and riches. Number three is doubt.
Is bowing to the Buddha statue and saying Namotasa Bhagavata, is that a rite and ritual?
No, that's a wholesome karma.
Okay.
That's not right. So riches, for example, they believe in worshipping the fire, this is called rites and riches. And here, during Buddha's time, the ascetic practice, naked practice, they do not wear anything in the winter season. This is also called one type of, I think, rice and riches. And also, they sleep on the thorn. The self-mortification, all these are wrong practices that cannot lead to the liberation. Okay. Because during the ancient Buddha's time, they think the defilements come from the body, not from the mind. So they torture their bodies, thinking that they can lead to liberation.
I think maybe your question came from the idea of Judeo-Christian culture, which or Jewish culture, which early on had problems with people praying to statues, and then later on saying, okay, no, that's not correct. That's a ritual. That's a rite. It won't help you. So that's what may be in many people's heads when they read that rites and rituals.
But the pay homage to the Lord Buddha, it means you recollect his virtues, Buddha's supreme quality. Then you have a lot of joy. So at that time, a lot of wholesome consciousness, jhana, arise and pathway in your mind. That's not rest and riches. Okay? This is called faith.
You just said it.
Huh? I said it.
Yeah. It can become a miracle ritual if you're bound to a Buddha statue without...
Without knowing anything. I think that this is the way leads to nibbana. Mm-hmm. That's for rest and riches.
They leads to bow to trees and things like that, right? Trees. Worship of trees and natural objects. That is wrong practice.
Bow to a tree.
Tree worship. Would there are devas in the tree?
Yes, there's deva in the tree. But deva is not our refuge. Okay? Only tree persons are our refuge.
You were saying in the case of, for example, if you're sleeping on thorns, they did it because they misunderstood. It doesn't come from body, it comes from mind.
The defilement, the defilement comes from the body.
Yeah, so the correct view is defilements come from the mind.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if then somebody sleeps on thorns, understanding that it comes from the mind, but they get the idea that they're going to do that because now they're going to sleep on thorns and they're going to control their mind as a way to make it stronger. Would you say that also is not good? Yes, they don't have the wrong view. They have the correct view that it comes from the mind. So
that's also wrong practice. It can lead to liberation. The Bodhisattva practiced self-mortification for 6 years. Then he would get enlightenment. Finally, he knows this self-mortification is not the right path. He gives up. Then he resumes taking food. Then he practices anapana, start with anapana. Then gradually he becomes enlightened. He also controls his mind. He even controls his breath, not to breathe in. But still cannot see nirvana. It's the wrong practice.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, but in his case, didn't it help to develop willpower and concentration so that he could, after that 6 years of, wasn't senseless.
I think it's not necessary. I can develop real power by sitting 6 hours for meditation rather than not lying on the phone, you know? It's humbling yourself. If your body gets too tired of too much suffering, you cannot concentrate. How can you concentrate? For example, if you have pain on your buttock, you already complain. Not to say lying on the phone. You cannot develop concentration. You're wasting time and torturing your body. Okay?
These are common practices even now in certain Hindu. They do it.
India has various types of practices. And the last one, doubt towards the Buddha, Dhamma and the Sangha. One Sotapan has unshakable faith towards Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha.
Normal people don't?
We still can change. For example, now you are a Buddhist. Maybe next life you become Christian. You criticize the Lord Buddha. It's possible.
Mm-hmm. So somebody who has already attained the past consciousness of Siddhartha, when this person is born, can you see from a child that this person doesn't have a feeling that this is fine, this is mine? How does it express itself in, for example, in a child?
That dhiti, that sakaya dhiti already uprooted in his mental stream.
Yes.
It's no more right, but he's still using conventional truth. But in his mental stream, that dhiti already permanently uprooted.
Mm-hmm. And so how does it come out? How does it come out in a child, for example?
That I have not yet experienced. I don't know how the Sotapan child, how he behaves. I don't know.
But this Sotapan being needs to go through the training in order to realize that he or she has uprooted the first path of position.
Does he need to go for further training?
Yes, for example, if you are a Sotapan, but you are reborn as a Christian, it's possible?
Not possible.
Not possible. So you will be reborn in a condition where you can practice again Samatha and Vipassana in order to realize that you have already attained.
But if you not reach Sotapan, for example, in the Pa'au Center, some meditators, when they listen their past life, dependent origination, they see past life they are Christian. They are not yet Sotapan yet. So that's why if you are not yet Sotapan, your faith to the triple gem cannot stay unshakable. It will change. Sometimes unluckily you were born in a Christian family, so you have to become Christian. So maybe the time you criticize the Buddha's teaching is not correct.
At some point it would be interesting to know how one chooses rebirth, like, or how that happens, because in this case the person would become a Buddhist, would be born into a Buddhist family.
Mm.
So I was curious, you know, sometimes people say, oh, well, you choose your family.
Mm-hmm.
And or as if who's the you and what? How does that connection happen?
If you want to become you want to reborn in a Buddhist family in your future, do you have that intention?
Do I? I haven't thought about it.
Okay. For somebody wants to reborn in a Buddhist family in a future life. So whenever they perform any wholesome deed, They make a wish, next life may I become a Buddhist. May I only associate with the wise.
Right.
Never associate with the foolish. The wish is very important.
And if someone doesn't even know to do that, they die, and they're going to be reborn, and they're reborn, well then, assuming they didn't do any of that, how does...
Even though inclination of the mind is also important. Before dying, maybe he inclined to certain rebirth, no? A rebirth in what country, in what country or in what family. That inclination is also very important. Although he did not speak out.
So an affinity with something
right.
that lives within us will steer where we go.
Will bring us to that what we
But what's out of our control for most people is choosing those different spheres, like that pyramid you had, the lower realm, the middle, and the upper. That's more or less predetermined, unless you're somebody.
No, the one is karma. The one, the karma determines.
Yeah, well, based on karma.
The one karma determines where you will be reborn.
Which is not inclination. That's totally.
No, okay. Even you. For example, even I incline to become a human, but during my dying moment, when that karma ripens. You know, even I incline to be, I cannot.
Mm-hmm.
The karma is more powerful than my inclination. Am I answering your
question? I just wanted to say many of us were born into Christian and Buddhist paths and Jewish families, and here we are still. I mean, you know, no one stopped us from becoming Buddhist in any of these conditions. So do you think... It's sort of kind of but do you think, I mean, maybe a condition like this, where conditions are so good for practice or whatever, or maybe they aren't, but whether it matters if you're born into a Buddhist family or if you're just in a situation where you can practice Buddhism or be a Buddhist. You see what I mean? Like if your wish is to live in a Buddhist family, then you're really saying, I don't want to be an American or a Western person for the most part, because chances are, statistically, you're going to have a much better chance of being born into a Buddhist family in Asia than in the West. So, is that really necessary?
I think it depends on your choice.
Mm-hmm.
I will wish to reborn in Buddhist country so I can learn Buddhism from my young. I don't have to accumulate so much unwholesome karma on when I grow up. I only know this unwholesome karma. You know? So if I reborn in the Buddhist country, the parents taught me, okay, caring is unwholesome since young. So since young, I have avoided all unwholesomeness. If only I'm 34 years old, I become Buddhist, oh, I know this is not correct, this is bad karma again. I already accumulated a lot of unwholesomeness. So I think it's important to
The five precepts are like most religions have those. I can't think of a religion that says killing is okay. I don't know, maybe I should take that. But
the view, the view, right view is also important.
Yes.
Right view. For example, the Buddha said that we are born here because of karma. You know? But other religions, Hindu may say because of creator. You know? Very much different. You know?
This question kind of goes along with what she said. Does that mean that the location doesn't really matter?
Location?
Let's say you die in Paraguay. Let's say you die in South America where there is no Buddhist for thousands of miles. You can then be reborn like on the other side of the world if you visualize that.
Yes.
Does the location or the proximity matter?
Yes, it's important. Location of rebirth, not dying. Dying is also important. For example, if you die with a group of Buddhist friends, the Buddhist friend will help you to have a good rebirth. But you die without good friends beside you, sometimes you think of unwholesome things. Then die, then you go to lower plane. So dying with a group of Buddhist friends who can help you to have better results is also important. And the locality, I think, is very important. For example, if you reborn in South Africa, which is no Buddhism at all, then how you know the teaching of the Buddhism? So you may perform a lot of unwholesome things, and yet you don't know it's unwholesome.
Or you just might be traveling there part of business.
Traveling is short time, no problem.
Don't worry about things like that. You have another question. Okay, this question is kind of similar. You know how Sotapanna, once you have the fast moment, you no longer have I, me, or mine.
Yes.
Let's say you're born again. You're born, you know, mm-hmm. you have your first life after that.
Mm-hmm.
Right away, from early childhood,
mm-hmm.
The child doesn't ever have any I, me, or mine.
Yes,
because so right away you know it's unusual.
Because that Sakaya Riti already permanently uplifted already. No more in the mental stream, whether you are a child or adult. No more in Sotapanna's mental stream. He may don't know how to express it, you know. But that mental stream is no more in his mind, how can it arise again? I think nearly 8 o'clock. So we have just a bit more. Can I continue?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So the benefits of attaining first path and crucial knowledge, Sotapanna. Number one, it closes the door to the four willful states. Never fall into four willful states. Number two, it shortens the suffering in the beginless round of rebirth. The most is only 7 lives to come. Some people become Sotapan, if they continue, they can become Arahant. But the most is only 7 lives. The assurance of 7 rebirths before final enlightenment. Then he possessed of the 7 noble treasures. All Sotapan possess 7 noble treasures. Number one, confidence. Confidence in the 3%. Number two, morality. He will never break 5 precepts, even in the dream. Okay. Number three, shame of wrongdoing. He feels so shameful of doing wrong things. Number four, is fear of wrongdoing. He afraid of wrongdoing. Number five, learning knowledge. Learning including practice. Number six, generosity. Sotapan will never stingy. He's very generous. Number seven, inside knowledge of wisdom. So Sotapan has these 7 noble treasures. And the Sotapan also will never conceal his wrong deed. If he has performed a wrong deed, he never conceal it. He will confess it.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the shine
should
replay all this. Yes. 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 Mm-hmm. Yes. That's Kuchitara. One, the myth of Queen Samawati. Every time when the queen gives her about 8 coins to buy flowers, the queen Samawati gives her 8 coins to buy flowers. Then she took half, then another half she used to buy flowers. So one day, for so long time, one day she happened to listen to Buddha's teaching. And after listening to the teaching, she became Sotapan. So she quickly go back, told the queen, previously you give me 8 coins, but I did not spend all, I keep for myself. She had to confess. Once she becomes Sotapan, she has to confess the misdeed. You cannot conceal it.
How can you have shame if you never steal, for example? How does number three?
The shame of wrongdoing, so you will not do. You will not do because you have the shame of doing the wrong thing. So you, for example, you become Sotapan, you will never commit sexual misconduct because they have the shame of wrongdoing.
But I thought you said that they would always confess the wrongdoing.
That wrong ruling is not including 5. They were never the story I've mentioned before. She was Sotapan. She had performed that misdeed.
Mm-hmm.
After become Sotapan, she cannot conceal that misdeed she has performed before she was Sotapan. Once Sotapan, she will never steal.
Okay.
Confess to whom?
Confess to the person you do wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. I'm just struggling with as to the comments you made earlier on about it would be unfortunate to be born a Christian. I'd be grateful if you could expand on that, and I'm also wondering, do you as a Buddhist recognize the wisdom that other spiritual paths have to offer?
Can you say it again?
I'm just wondering if you could expand on, what, on your
expression,
or to expand a little bit more on why it would be unfortunate
to be
born a Christian. Thank you.
Do I say that just now?
No, it's just previous. I'm sorry, there was a few questions being taken in the meantime.
Okay.
But it was something.
So why is it unfortunate to become a Christian?
To be born Christian.
Did I say that it's unfortunate to be a Christian?
I think it was in the context of somebody who would like to be Buddhist, and would like to follow the path, and has decided that.
Yes,
yes.
I think it's a frustrating expression. So, what you say is correct. I didn't say that to become a Christian is unfortunate, but for those who want to follow the path, but if he was reborn in the Christian family, become unfortunate for him.
Why might that be?
Because the practice is the wisdom. The Buddha's practice is leading to the attainment of enlightenment, the liberation from the realm of rebirth. But a Christian practice is go to the heaven, I don't know.
ตัวสารีเรียกว่าอะไรตัวพระธรรมสารีบอกว่าตอนนี้ผมไม่เที่ยวสิตอนนี้ผมเที่ยวแต่ว่าเวลาเดียวก็เวลาเที่ยวเองแต่เนี่ยนั้นตอนนี้ก็ตีนี่เราเวลาเป็นแต่ทุกทีก็เวลาที่ทำสิ่งนี้ก็ไม่ได้หรอกที่ตอนนี้ก็เนี่ยนั้นปฏิบัติไม่รู้ตัวคริสเตียน
So what we say is that when you become Sotapan, wherever you reborn, it already doesn't matter, because your confidence to the Triple Gem will never shake. Even you are reborn in Christian's house, you will never follow their practice. You only practice your own way. So once you become Sotapan, it doesn't matter where you reborn.
And does Buddhism see the wisdom that other spiritual paths have to offer?
What the spiritual path the Buddhism offer?
No, other religions. That's what I said. Other religions also have.
Mm. But the aim is different, I think. The aim, the goal is different. For example, the Hinduism, they believe in the
soul
and eternal world. The Buddhism never believe in eternal world. Even the Hinduism believe in the creator, they call great Brahma, the Venerable Sariputta's mother. Venerable Sariputta's mother is a very lucky woman. She has seven sons, all become arahant. And yet she believe in Hinduism, believe the great Brahma is creator. So the belief is different, the goal is different. Of course, Christian has their own good practice, Hinduism has their own good practice. The goal, the ultimate goal is different. Maybe the Hinduism's goal is again, come back again and again in heaven, but in the Buddhism, heaven is not permanent, it's not eternal. Once the karma exhausted, the beings in the heaven will fall down again. But the Hinduism, the belief is eternal. So a lot of distance. Okay. Now we come to attainment of Sotapatti, Fruition, Palasamapatti. So once the person becomes Sotapan, he can enter into the attainment of Fruition to experience the bliss of Nibbana. So the connective process of the Palasamapati run as follows. Number one is vibrating consciousness, arresting consciousness, and the mind of averting consciousness. Taking either anicca, dukkha, or anatta of formation. Then preparation, assess conformity, and now no more change of lineage.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because he already cut off the lineage of wording.
Mm-hmm.
No need to change again from the wording lineage to the noble. Replace with purification.
Mm-hmm.
After that, fruition consciousness, because past consciousness will never arise again, the fruition consciousness arise many, many times, depend on how long you want to enter into that attainment. Taking Nibbana as a check. For example, you enter into Pala Samapati or attainment of fruition for 1 hour, then this fruition consciousness will arise for 1 hour. Then after that, the mind left into Bhavanga.
So when the object is, let's say someone attains the Sapati, that knowledge using impermanence as the object, when they do the fruition knowledge, does it also have to take impermanence as the object?
Mm-hmm.
And then what about subsequent past knowledges? Do they always take impermanence, or can they,
the second Sapati, then I think either one can be suffering, dukkha, or anatta.
Okay.
So we will end here.
When you go from, when you enter first jhana, you have a change of lineage.
Change of lineage,
yeah. And then again later when you go from vipassana into sotapanna, you have a change of lineage. You have a past consciousness with a change of lineage. But then it doesn't happen again after that. After, when you go from first jhana to second jhana, is there a change of lineage? And then from second to third jhana, is there a change of lineage? Or is it all the jhanas are in one lineage?
These are not two lineages, they are two particular vodana.
No, tutiyoha, ho, satamasana, dutiyasana, yavaka, suvaka. So change of lineage, mapara, ho.
Yes,
vodana,
yeah.
It's not change of lineage. Hold on, sanabaya. Sanabaya, vodana. Let me check for you tomorrow, okay? I think it's not change of lineage.
The Venerable Siddhamachara, in his first Dhamma talk, explained that there were three separate states of consciousness. The first is thinking, what worldlings do all the time. And the second is jhana, all states of jhana. And the third is nibbana. So I'm just wondering if that's the marker that you're passing from one to another, is that change of lineage?
No, it's different. It's different. Okay, I want to clarify one point. Okay. Just now I think I've made a very small mistake here. Here is actually excess concentration. Actually, excess concentration. And the previous one is also called excess concentration, but not the true excess concentration. Metaphysically, is it? Metaphysically,
yeah.
Called excess concentration. This is the actual excess concentration. Because excess concentration, we call neighborhood, neighbor close to the jhana.
What is the difference between the red A, or the first axis, and the second axis?
Connected process.
And if someone can reach access, does that mean that they can then reach jhana, or are there cases where you can reach access but you will never be able to reach jhana?
No, this process runs as continuously. That what you mean access maybe before this connected process.
Oh,
this one. Preceding.
In that case, it would be access.
And during excess concentration, sometimes the mind may fall into bhavanga because five contouring faculties is not balanced yet.
So if that happens, is that a sign to the person that they are then there on that continuum?
Which is sign of them?
Well, if they can fall into bhavanga during meditation,
not yet. Preceding.
The preceding.
Preceding connected process.
I see. But that isn't, that just says nothing about whether one can then enter into this continuum.
I see. This one is already sure to attain jhana. Only a person attain that jhana for the first time, this connected process arises in his mind. So if he's not attaining jhana, this connected process will not arise in his mind.
So this process, what you call bodhisattva, change of lineage, you know, if he doesn't practice, then it won't happen again. So, I mean, if you don't practice jhana again, and you, then the lineage doesn't last. I mean, if it's, you know, while you're practicing.
Yes.
So if you don't,
you should see it as a mind, every mind moment. You should not see it as a, you know, as now or now I'm practicing or not practicing. You should see it as a continuity of mind moment.
Yeah, for that sitting or whatever. Why is that the access so important, whereas there is no change in the others, which are, you know, more concentrated, like the second, third, fourth?
I'm not clear about
that. Why is that change of lineage happen at access when the real
access concentration?
Yeah. Why is it not more prominent or called by a different name when you actually advert, or you go into the first, second, third, and so on, jhanas? I mean, access.
Yeah, we have two access. This also access, and access concentration also access. Please make your question clear so that I can answer.
Yeah. Now you're saying there's a change of lineage.
Okay, change of lineage. Change of lineage of this one.
Okay, change of lineage going into jhana means any jhana. Is it first, second, third? Doesn't matter.
That's the question. I will find out for you tomorrow.
Oh, okay.
Okay, now already 8:16. Nearly 2 hours already. We don't have to make a stop. Tomorrow we continue. Okay.
Idam me punyam
astava kayavaham
astava
kayavaham
odu
idam me
punyam
nibbanasa
pacchayo
odu
Tawata
Chaammehi
Sampadam
Sabbe Deva
Sabbe Buddha
Sabbe Satta
Anumodantu
anumodantu
sabba sampatti siddhiya
sabba sampatti siddhiya
sadhu
sadhu sadhu.
Then tomorrow we should stop after 1 hour.